There it is, Fort Ticonderoga, and across the lake was Fort Independence, and rising up directly behind us is Mount Defiance. This is what Digby saw in 1777.
On the eastern shore of the inlet, and opposite to Ticonderoga, they had taken still more pains in fortifying a high circular hill to which they gave the name of Mount Independent. On the summit of this, which is tableland, they had erected a star fort enclosing a large square of barracks well fortified and supplied with artillery. The enemy, with their usual industry, had joined those two posts by a bridge of communication thrown over the inlet.
I can see that narrow point there. That's where the bridge must have been located.
This was like many other of their performances, a great and most laborious work. The bridge was supported on 12 sunken piers of very large timber, planted at nearly equal distances. The spaces between these were filled with separate floats, each about 50 feet long and 12 feet wide, strongly fastened together with chains and rivets, and as effectually attached to the sunken pillars on the Lake Champlain side of the bridge. It was defended by a boom, composed of very large pieces of timber, fastened together by riveted bolts and double chains made of iron 1.5 inches square. Thus not only a communication was maintained between these two posts, but all access by water from the northern side was totally cut off.
Digby is astonished by the industriousness of the rebels, who had made such vast improvements within a year.
Right. It wasn't like these guys had power tools or heavy lifting equipment.
That's good. You're getting your head into 1777. Having already received intelligence about the vulnerabilities of the fort, Burgoyne dispatched his own engineer to study the feasibility of hauling cannon up Mount Defiance. Everything is unfolding around July 4th, 1777.
Independence Day!
It wasn't a great day for the Americans. Here's what Burgoyne had to say.
Lieutenant Twiss, the commanding engineer, was ordered to reconnoiter Mount Defiance on the southwest side of the communication from Lake George into Lake Champlain. Lieutenant Twiss reported this hill to have the entire command of the works and buildings, both of Ticonderoga and Mount Independence, that the ground might be leveled so as to receive cannon, and that a road to convey them, though difficult, might be made practicable in 24 hours.
And it was General Phillips that looked up Mount Defiance, or what they called Sugar Hill, and said, "Where a goat can go, a man can go, and where a man can go, he can lug weapons." So up they went. However, the rebels saw what was happening upon Mount Defiance during the night by observing smoke and fire on the hill.
The commanding officer was reckoned guilty of a great oversight in lighting fires on that post, though I am informed it was done by the Indians, the smoke of which was soon perceived by the enemy in the fort.
Imagine being St. Clair in the fort below, and you look up and see the British have taken the advantage on the hill with cannons ready. He was really in a compromising position. Now he had to decide the fate of every man, woman, and child in that fort.
He should get out of there. His son was there, so this was personal. They would all soon be blown to smithereens.
That is easy for you to say, but these men lived by a code of honor that glorified courage, virtue, and personal honor above all else, even above life itself. To run would be perceived as cowardly.
It sounds like St. Clair doesn't stand a chance.
St. Clair ultimately decided to run, and he was eventually court-martialed for his desertion of Fort Ty. Luckily for him, though, Riedesel, who was pulling up the eastern flank, could not cross the broad mouth of East Creek that was north of Fort Independence. This allowed St. Clair a limited window before his retreat would be cut off and his army defeated. By 9 p.m., General St. Clair sent orders for all the stores and munitions to be evacuated by boat, along with sick and invalid, towards Skeensboro, while the troops escaped by road on the east side of Fort Independence.
Okay, so they are retreating. Didn't Burgoyne see them escaping?
Against all orders, one of the houses at the fort was set on fire, which lit up the night sky and gave the British the opportunity to see the whole retreat.
Sounds like a mess.
By the crack of dawn, St. Clair brought the men into line to organize the march to the perceived safety of New England. They went about 20, 25 miles before they halted to refresh.
At the first dawn of light, three deserters came in and informed that the enemy were retreating the other side of Mount Independent. The general was, without loss of time, made acquainted with it, and the army were ordered to march and take possession of the garrison and hoist the king's colors, which was immediately done. And the grenadiers and light infantry were moved under the command of Brigadier General Fraser.
So the Brits took the day.
For Burgoyne, this was a great victory. What Burgoyne and everyone in London believed would be an insurmountable task proved to be only a minor hiccup in the effort to wipe out the rebellion. Burgoyne had captured the legendary fort.
He said he was the guy to do it, and he did it. It was a clear victory for the British.
I doubt Burgoyne anticipated that the rebels would escape his grasp. The rogue army could be a serious threat to his progress. At any rate, I bet he had a few celebratory glasses of Madeira and a good night's sleep. Hey, now we can go explore the history of the French and Indian War and the Revolutionary War at Fort Ticonderoga.
I want to go to the top of Mount Defiance and cross the lake to hike the trails at Mount Independence.